That was Don't Stop Me Now by Queen, and You Can't Stop Us Right Now. This is DJ Hacksaw coming to you live from the Bravo Sierra Hour. Today I have a very special guest on me, Mr. Jeffrey Shear, running for Cambridge Mayor.
Yes, good afternoon.
It's great to have you on. We'll be talking about not only your policies, but a bit of your history in Cambridge, how you got started in politics, and we'll just be finding out why the youth in particular are very interested in voting for you. So, just to get started, what got you into politics?
I originally got into politics. I gained some popularity for my protesting for medical marijuana, and I just thought I would basically enter the race. I'd see how I would do, and I got a great reception to running. And so it's continued on, and I've gained a lot of support along the way. I keep getting overwhelmed with messages every day of people, positive messages of support on Facebook and on emails, and it's really been a great experience.
Now, your protest in particular has sort of gained you a bit of internet fame, especially in the Cambridge area, just because that's where you were protesting, but in general as well. Talk to me about that, because I've seen pictures of you doing that protest. What inspired you to do that in particular?
Initially, I was improperly arrested and charged for marijuana possession in October of 2016. I had my medical marijuana documentation on me at the time, but they refused to, the Waterloo Regional Police refused to check over the documentation and actually verified it. So I was arrested. And then 2 days later, I came back to the police station to protest my arrest by smoking marijuana at the front of the sidewalk area in front of the police station. And I was again promptly arrested and brought to jail for the first time in my life, and I was held there for about 18 hours. And my medical marijuana documentation ended up being legitimate, and it took a long time to get my charges actually dropped. It took almost 11 and a half months of work to actually get them to drop the charges, despite the fact that there wasn't any validity to them. So it went through a lot of processes, a lot of discussions, and they just weren't getting anywhere, which is when I decided to start protesting the matter. And after I did that, it started to gain a lot of traction very quickly. I was interviewed by The Record. Gordon Paul at The Record did an interview, and the next day I had 250 Facebook requests the very next day, and I was getting interview requests from all over. And that put some pressure on the Crown, and within a week and a half later, the charges were dropped. So it was just it was not getting anywhere, and I needed to find a way that would get the matter talked about and discussed, and I was very successful at doing that.
I'd say so. For those who don't know, Mr. Shaver, he went out dressed very interestingly. I believe it was a thong.
A thong I was dressed in with a basically smoking my bong at the courthouse with two signs I got printed up. One that said, return my bong. The other one said, return my marijuana. The original seizing of the marijuana was actually only over about 3 grams of marijuana, but I was destined to get it back because it was improperly taken from me. So I was filing the various motions to do that. And in fact, just last month, I received the final bit of it returned to me. It's a little package from a sample, I believe, that was sent to Health Canada, and they returned an additional 1.15 grams to me. They just came unannounced to my house last month, and returned a little bit more.
So you got a little free weed then.
Yeah.
So just on policy-wise, I think it's fair to assume that you're pro-legalization, or at least decriminalization?
Yeah. Yes, definitely pro-legalization. I was celebration the other day I took part of in front of the police station again. The same one I was originally arrested at 420 for the 17th there. And definitely, I think we need to still, there's still a few problems with the legalization. There's still a lot of offenses that have been elaborated on, particularly for youth under the age of 18. The offenses have, the type of offenses there are have gone up dramatically for persons caught. So we have to watch that we're not creating another justice situation where we're not actually relieving any of the administrative problems that it was causing us before. It seems like we're creating new administrative issues to spend money on, and I really hope that going forward the laws on marijuana can still be adjusted a little better to remove some of the administrative costs to us. I mean, we have to look at regulating just as an income and as a product, as opposed to the strict regimes that I think that are currently set up to regulate it. With only one online dispensary and no ability to get it right now, it's kind of hard to affect the black market. I mean, especially at the price that they're currently offering it for, it's a lot more than what's currently being sold for. So I have some suspicions that it's not going to have much of an impact for the black market if that's what the intent of legalizing it this way was. So I think there's definitely a lot of work that still needs to be done on marijuana laws.
So in a perfect world, what what do you see as the best version of
the well, I guess from the taxation sense, the Revenue Canada needs to know about how you're making money. And really, the only it needs to be is like the safety of the product and I guess who it's being sold to. So there's controls for the age that it's being sold to. But really, other than that, we're putting a lot more of restrictions on it. Then that means you have to pay someone to enforce those restrictions. So it's a little bit of expense. We're looking to try to do it for also expense savings. The amount of money wasted in court resources on small marijuana cases is quite ridiculous. And if we're just adding more administrative tasks, it's not going to save as much money as it could potentially save. So I think we really need to look at exactly what we need to be regulating on it. And that's really what's in the marijuana, the money that's being made from it. So where it's going, as long as that's being properly reported as income, and the actual restrictions on where it's being sold. The consumption side, I think the Smoke-Free Ontario Act is the best way to regulate that, and I'm glad that the regulations have been adjusted to allow it to be consumed where cigarettes are being consumed. But now, I guess we have municipalities and private organizations, including the universities and colleges in this area, creating their own regulations for use on their own property. So now that's going to come into them having to come over and inspect if you're smoking tobacco or smoking marijuana. So, I mean, it's going to create, again, creating more administrative tasks that aren't necessarily, need to be created.
Now, you're not just I don't want people to think you're not just a one-issue candidate. Marijuana, obviously, your biggest cause, but you also have been a big proponent of the one-click bus system.
So, yeah, I went to Conestoga College for robotics and automation, and then I also returned to for my electrician apprenticeship in school of training at Conestoga College as well. So I worked in the automotive industrial automation industry, and I want to see a lot more automation used in order to help us save some money on some of our regional services. There's a service they recently started doing in Belleville with their buses, and it's a dial-a-bus system that uses an application. So you may be familiar with older dial-a-bus systems where you call in and schedule where you need your bus, but this one actually relies on an app. So it's kind of like an Uber bus situation. You schedule where your bus needs to pick you up and drop you off, and the system works with multiple requests, and it figures out a best route that it can be within a 5 to 10 minute walk for everyone. And in Belleville, after 7 p.m., they got rid of all their fixed bus routes, and they switched exclusively to this dial-a-bus system by app. And that allows them more flexibility to serve their entire city, because we have problems in Cambridge of not serving people that are getting off on afternoon shift. We're not serving the industrial area as well. We have different residential sections of our city that cuts off transit service after 7 p.m. and after 10 p.m. And this can be a more cost-effective way to be able to deliver transit. You're not stuck to existing routes where you'd have to add one bus on every single route in order to add more capacity. So you'd be looking at 10 plus buses an hour. You could actually add as many buses in the hour that are needed. So you could perhaps start the day with 4 to 6, and you could actually work your way up, because it's about having the capacity to meet a reasonable travel time demand. So it's a different way to look at transit. Transit can go where it's requested, and it can avoid the areas it's not being requested. And you can do that dynamically when you're planning it with an application that's telling the driver essentially where to go. So it makes it a lot more custom transit solution. It also offers for a two-tiered payment. So you could also potentially pay a little bit more, and you could get door-to-door service so long as your street was applicable for a bus to be able to run on it. So it could potentially offer us two-tiered pricing for our transit service, a regular price to pick you up and drop you off within about 10 minutes of your destination, like our typical bus system normally works, or you could potentially pay a bit more, especially when there's that capacity, if there happens to be a really low demand day, that you might get a pop-up notification on your phone, asking you if you want to pay an extra $5 to be able to be delivered right to your door. So it also offers us another mode to generate some income that way.
And then imagine it also raises a need for employment just in the bus sector as well.
Yes, so there's a lot of people that that have been refusing employment or have to turn down overtime because they can't use the bus system. It causes great frustration that you can't get there, or people can't arrange drives. So this allows a better system that would perhaps be able to expand our transit to around 1 a.m. So if you get off on afternoon shift, you'd actually be able to use the system better to still get home within the time that transit is still running. And as I say, it makes it more cost effective to deliver the service because you're not stuck to delivering one bus per route. You could actually deliver a more dynamic amount of buses that meets the actual capacity requirements. And that can change on a day-to-day basis, as opposed to only having a regular daily and a weekend holiday schedule. You can actually dynamically change your, if you have an event going on, you're going to need a couple more buses. Well, you can have a couple more buses and you're not always fixed to the same schedules. You can actually go to where the demand is going to be.
So those seem to me to be two influential points. And are there any other big campaign promises that you want people to be aware of?
Right now, we're planning on the LRT section for Cambridge, and we're going at it quite fast. And the routes that we're planning, we're currently planning on coming down Shaunts Hill, and that's going to create some great difficulty. It's going to be a structure that's going to be elevated above traffic. And there is some additional options that we could go, and that's through Riverside Park, so long as we can work out an agreement with CP Rail for some modifications that would be required there. But that would also, going through Riverside Park, also allows us to save some historic buildings in Preston that will otherwise have to be demolished to accommodate a new station. If we go through Riverside Park, we'd be able to move the station a little towards the MPP's office on Eagle Street, which would allow us to save some homes from the late 1860s that would otherwise be demolished along the path. Cambridge has a lot more of an open area compared to Kitchener-Waterloo, so we have some ability to move this route around to be able to reduce the amount of homes that are going to be affected directly by the route. And I think it's really important to do that. We have a historic town, and we need to maintain that wherever we can. So we really need to look at, because once the LRT is down, it's down for, you know, a good number of years. So we really need to plan out where we're going to do this. And I think in the meantime, this dial-a-bus system can potentially allow us to increase our transit usage in Cambridge, because we are definitely lacking in our in the amount of people that use transit in Cambridge in comparison to Kitchener-Waterloo. And I think this is one way we can increase our transit usage in order to use the LRT once it eventually does come. And I do think it should be pushed back slightly, but not, you know, we're currently talking about it being, you know, we're planning for, you know, 5 to 8 years to 10 years to start building. I think, you know, 10 to 12, we should be planning just a little bit more, not too much, but we need to plan it right, so that way, as I say, it's going to be here for many years, and I think we need to raise our the people using transit beforehand, and this dial-a-bus service, I think, can do that.
Sure. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with more from Jeffrey Shaver. This next song goes out to all the small-town boys and girls. And we're back with Jeffrey Shaver here on Bravo Sierra Hour. Now, Mr. Shaver, you are also a big, advocate for mental health and mental health awareness. Am I correct in saying that?
Yes. So there's some issues we have in the region of Waterloo. The opioid crisis currently affecting us. We have a lack of housing options for people in the region of Waterloo as well. And those are some issues we have to tackle in order to actually make an effective impact on our community. For affordable housing, I want to see new developments include a certain percentage of rent geared to income housing. We need to make that a requirement of all new development that are large townhouse and apartment condo developments that have a portion of that, so we can start to fill this infrastructure gap that we have on our affordable housing list. We have lists waiting up to 7 years in some cases for people to get into rent geared to income regional housing. So we need to make an effect on that, because getting someone stable housing will have a dramatic increase on anyone's mental health, regardless of the conditions they're currently suffering from. The ability to know that your possessions are safe and you can come back to somewhere stable, key. Right now, our shelter space is currently being overloaded with what its capacity is intended for. And we need the housing spaces and the outreach workers to actually be able to keep people in their houses. And one of the things we need to focus with our outreach workers is they need to focus on people that are currently at risk of eviction. And we need to see what we can do to keep them in their housings, to try to get them supports, because if they end up in the shelter system, it's so harder to get them a new shelter than it is to accommodate someone in their existing shelter situation. So we really need to focus on that, try to get people access to additional services. Right now, the only detox and treatment programs locally for detox is at the Grand River Hospital. And I would like to see the programs expanded into Cambridge with to be able to actually offer some additional services. We have the RAC program, which is Rapid Access Addictions treatment program, located at the nurse practitioner's office in downtown Galt, but it's only currently able to operate one day a week. And that program in particular uses a person with previous drug use experience that's gone through recovery, It uses a nurse practitioner, and it uses a counselor to try to guide you in your path to recovery, to find you those actual resources. And that service is only available on Fridays. And I think we really need to make that a daily, regular Monday to Friday service that's available to our community, so we can try to get people geared into some of the programs that we actually have. Because a lot of times people aren't even realizing what's available. Now, there is long wait lists, and we need to work on addressing those. So we really do need to accommodate more support workers to actually work frontline in the community. And now another thing I want to get to is automation and more of a portal experience for the services you have at the region, because there's a little bit of ways to save on that if these common services at the region, instead of calling in and scheduling something, if you do it online on an app, selecting a calendar when you want your appointment, if you go online and you need to change it later, do that in an app so that way you don't need to call in, save a little bit of administration time so we can spend some more of our money on these frontline services like mental health and addictions treatment programs through the region of Waterloo. And like I say, right now with housing, we really need to get the housing issues first, because regardless of your mental health problems, getting access to that stable housing is key. And that's why the Housing First initiative focuses on just that, getting people housing first before taking care of any other issue. And with the drug addictions and safe injection sites, I think they really are a key way to access people that are using drugs and to continually be able to be monitored by a nurse, so to keep track of their health conditions. And it will be a nurse that would be nudging them towards the direction of treatment and giving them the options that are available in their area, and keep on reminding them of those options and checking in on their general well-being. And it's a way that we can still keep people in the medical system, because we're at great risk that people with drug addiction and mental health issues avoid the medical system at all costs. And we need to do our best to try to keep them in the system, because that saves money in the long run. It reduces ambulance costs and other emergency services costs that we're spending money on. Instead, we need to go a little bit out of prevention to try to minimize some of these issues. So mental health and addictions in the region, we definitely need some increased focus on, and I think that housing is one of the main priorities that we need to look at for that situation.
And I mean, I can personally vouch for that. The Bridges downtown, the homeless shelter at Cambridge, I used to work at the Shoppers right across the street, and I can personally vouch that we do need a solution to that.
Yes, and there is some talk about the Bridges might be expanding to offer more service with the possibility of a location moving, but we need to offer a little more security too, because with the Bridges, it forces everyone to be in a common area, and it's really not a good situation. There's not the greatest of security between persons. There's been assaults and other issues, we need to offer more permanent solutions for housing to be able to get some of these people transitioned into housing, and like I say, and keep people in their houses and out, and prevent them from ending up using the shelter system by getting them that support that allows them to stay in their own houses so they don't end up getting evicted for causing issues. We need to try to avoid that situation wherever we can.
Of course. And I hate to go back to the weed subject, but when would have been the perfect time for you to have seen weed legalization?
Oh, well, I mean, it couldn't have happened quick enough. And like I said, there is still some modifications that I think are needed. But I mean, we're spending a ridiculous amount of money targeting these prosecutions it's common for small amounts, amounts under 30 grams of marijuana that people are constantly being charged with. And I mean, there's just thousands of cases across Canada each year that it's a real waste of taxpayer money to be constantly pursuing those when there is so much support for it. I think there's still is going to be some issues right now with enforcement on it, and especially the cost of enforcement on this. There should be, the new regulations essentially created a whole bunch of more things that are now illegal, and I can only really expect there to be a lot more action because of that. And the prices with the current legal marijuana system, I don't think are in check with what the market demand situation is, so there's still going to be a lot more people maybe looking up at the price and deciding, nope, I'm still going to go back to my regular dealer, because they're just it's not making, I don't think, a good push to be able to get a hold of the black market.
Now, what do you say, what's your opinion on the situation with America? Because if someone has consumed marijuana in Canada, where it's legal, and they try to head over to the States, they have to declare it. And even though it's legal in 9 states, it's still illegal at the federal level. So they're barred from entering the U.S. What's your opinion on that?
That's going to be, I'm sure that's going to need to be worked out with the United States. We're going to be, I mean, we've got a large amount of trade that goes between us, both for a lot of tourism, and that's gonna start causing some issues pretty quick. But I would hope that we can work something out with that, because this is legal in Canada. As long as people aren't bringing it across the border with them, we can work something out with the Americans on that. I'm not so sure what restrictions in other parts of Europe that has some legalization that this has in comparison caused to the United States, but definitely something needs to be worked on.
And I know there are some listeners that may be anti-marijuana or anti-medical marijuana. What would you say to them?
Well, I think we, like, as I mean, we'd be respectful. We need to make sure that it's being smoked in the proper areas, you know, that the new regulations are equivalent to the tobacco, so people need to be staying 10 meters away from regular entrance doors and not in the common areas, and need to stay at least 20 meters away from children's areas like playgrounds and splash pads, and not on school grounds, not on a hospital ground. So we need to make sure people are actually following those regulations. It seems like there's oftentimes people aren't following the regulations when they're smoking tobacco. And so I think it's going to come down to a lot of people maybe might not follow the regulations on that, but I think it's going to need to be followed, or else it's going to be, you know, restricted even more. So we need to hopefully work with what's there to hopefully accommodate everyone.
We're going to take another quick break, and we'll be back again with more from Jeffrey Shaver. This one goes out to anyone who's maybe enjoying the new legalization. We've got a little Bob Marley for you. And we're back with the Brava Sierra Hour. I'm here with Jeffrey Shaver. Now, Mr. Shaver, as we've sort of established here, you are a big proponent for the legalization of marijuana. And as most of my listeners know, I am part of the military reserves, a combat engineering regiment. And I'd love to get your opinion on what you think of the use of marijuana in the military reserves, Air Force, all that.
Well, I guess there is a policy that was recently changed by the military to allow it in certain situations for people that are on their off time. So it's a good thing that they've actually accommodated it to some extent. I guess the military is a specialty area, so they get to make the argument that their certain things are too sensitive for it. And I guess there is that's, you know, to be expected, particularly from the recreational side of it anyway. So I guess it's good that they are accommodating it slightly to allow people that are off duty to partake in it. There's been similar policies issued by police forces. So that's, we recently had Brian Larkin discussing the policy of the Waterloo Regional Police for how their officers would be able to partake in recreational use their requirements to for how long it is before they are fit for duty again. So I think it's a good thing that they're looking at providing some reasonable usage of it to allow for persons in service duties.
Now, I'm assuming you're more on the liberal side of the political spectrum, yes?
It's a mixed, I have different values that, I mean, I think on the control of what we spend should be rather tight to the issues that the region is focused on, and that should be that we're focusing on housing, mental health, addictions, transit, and our infrastructure, particularly unless a program or a user fee can be sustained for a program that we're doing or a partnership. So I, in terms of political spectrum, I think I'm a bit mixed across the board for what that is.
So with the recent sweep in, so what party do you tend to affiliate then with? Your own party? Independent?
Yeah, independent, yeah.
So what do you think, I hate to ask this, just as you are your own independent party, but what do you think of the recent Ontario election?
So, I don't know, I haven't really been focusing much on the Ontario issues other than certain select things that's been affecting municipalities. Safe injection funding is currently not been canceled, but it is up for review. So that, I hopefully can be worked forward on. But other than that, I've been focusing on municipal issues, not provincial issues.
Fair enough. So is there a message that you'd really want to get across today to the university students that are listening right now?
Yes. Make sure you get out and vote on October 22nd. Check your different candidates' webpage. You can check out my webpage at Jeffrey Shaver. That's JeffreyShaver.ca. Look for your other candidates' webpages. Have a look at what they have to offer. People that are in Cambridge can vote for me. Depending on where you live, you can vote for your own candidates in your own city and look up their platforms and see what they have to say. Most are on Facebook as well. So it's, you know, vote for the candidate that is most aligned to what how you believe this, the region or city should be run.
Now, I've noticed that you aren't on social media a lot. Like, you don't have Twitter, you don't have Instagram, that sort of thing. Is there a reason for that?
I just have the Facebook account right now and my webpage. That's just what I've been focusing on right now. I haven't broadened out to the other social media applications. Just been focusing on Facebook and my webpage.
Now, I did have a question coming in just from a friend of mine. There's a there's certain different types of marijuana, I guess, and are there any preferences that you have for medical purposes?
Well, it depends. For like back pain issues, I find that more of a higher THC marijuana has been helpful, but I've also been using some of the ones that have the CBD in them as well too. And it for me, I find that it's a blend of the two has worked the best to be able to help be calm and for depression and anxiety issues, and to help out with pain management of my back. I find that it's a mixture of both is what works for me.
Now, would you promote, say, edibles over smoking, or which would you promote?
It all depends on how it affects you, and there's also topicals, too. And for the most part, I normally take it by a vaporizer self. It's the easiest way to control your dosage, in my opinion. Some people prefer edibles, and that's fine as long as it works out for you. Really, it's whatever method works out for you the best for you.
So, in your opinion, should teens and people in university be smoking marijuana, say, before classes or to help them study?
It depends on the person, really. If that will help them or hinder them. Some people with that are hyper can react differently actually to marijuana than people that aren't, and it may offer them some bit clarity in helping them with their with controlling on thoughts on single tasks. So in some cases, it can help. That's what in a lot of cases medical marijuana been prescribed for in cases of anxiety, so you'd be able to deal with public situations in school and being in class, different situations that can cause you anxiety. So it can be helpful in certain cases, yes.
Now, some people argue that marijuana is a gateway drug to, say, harder drugs such as cocaine, meth, things like that. What would you say to that?
I don't think that's entirely necessarily true. In some cases, it might be that the person you're buying off, if it comes that you're exposed to situations like that. So better with marijuana being regulated and so legally, that's going to be become not so frequent for that situation. And in my opinion, alcohol has been more of a gateway drug than what marijuana has been into the harder stuff. I don't think that that's really a true situation, that it's a gateway drug. There's many people that smoke marijuana and never do anything else, myself included. So that's I don't think it's really an accurate depiction for marijuana being a gateway drug.
Now, what would you say to people who say, oh, we should just if we're going to legalize marijuana, we should legalize all drugs?
I think actually to a certain extent that might be effective. If you look at Portugal's model for drug enforcement, where essentially they don't lay charges unless it's above a certain threshold, normally what ends up just happening is it's seized by the police officer, so they're still taking it away. It's an illegal drug. But they're not laying the charges for small amounts. And that also means that it reduces a little bit of police costs. You don't have someone that suddenly needs to flee from you just because they have a small amount on them. So it leads to less intense police standoffs because the person doesn't need to worry as much about the situation otherwise. So, and as well, I mean, it's... We can't just arrest our way out of the situation. We have to look at other ways to entice people to get them into treatment because, I mean, we look all around the world arresting them out of the situation, and it's not working. We've been doing that for years. We need to look at getting people into treatment programs to actually control the situation as opposed to just trying to arrest our way out of it.
Now, I've heard a lot about Amsterdam's model. They aren't exactly legalizing all the drugs, but they're very lenient on marijuana, mushrooms, most hallucinogens. I've heard of LSD as well. Would you want to follow their model, or...?
Not necessarily. Although, like I said, I would support small amounts being... if it were to be similar to the Portugal's model, I think would be a little better, where it would still give them discretion to take it, for safety issues, but in general, it wouldn't be an issue clogging our courts. It's more about safety than it is anything. So I think that would be, looking at the Portugal's model would be the best solution going forward in order to control some of these costs on spending and actually spend our money where it's actually going to help reduce the problem as opposed to just maintain what we currently have going on.
And what type of rehabilitation would you suggest, just based off what you said already and any new information you
might have? We need the spacing in order for that rehab and detox programs. I mean, right now, the limited availability of the treatment program at Grand River Hospital, you often get into situations where a person may call in to the HERE 24/7 helpline, for instance, and say that, you know, they've been sober for a little bit and they want to get into a treatment program today. And they're told that they don't have any availability for the next few days or a week. And, you know, it means that you've lost your ability to perhaps contact that person in the week when they're ready for contact. So we really need to look at getting our capacity up on those issues because, I mean, when someone's ready to go, we should be doing what we can in order to get them into that service. So we have to make sure that we're available to accommodate that. And we really need more space in order to be able to do that. I mean, certain people that have private coverage through employment hand programs, for instance, they might be able to get into a paid program of their own and with coverage. But when you're currently on ODSP or OW, there are some limited spaces for that, but they are it's harder to get into them. So we need to look at expanding that access to try to get people into these programs is a lot better of a solution than trying to arrest our way out of the problem, and especially the costs involved with that, the labor-intensive cost of that for essentially what you're trying to do is you're trying to get them to quit drugs anyway, so why not actually put that money into mental health workers and medical workers to try to accomplish that goal, because I think it's a lot more, you're going to have a lot more success rates with them trying to accomplish that than you are trying to arrest your way out of the situation.
For sure. Now we're just going to take one more quick break, and then we'll be back with some fun tips for studying, as well as more interview with Jeffy Schaefer. And we are back with Bravo CR Hour. I'm here with Jeffy Schaefer, running for Cambridge Council. Before we get back with the amazing interview we're having so far, I'd just like to give you guys a few study habits. Just as we all know midterms coming up, no one likes midterm. But if you want to have a more enjoyable study time, it's recommended that you A, listen to music, but no music with lyrics, more classical music, things like that. Also, try chewing gum. I personally prefer mint myself, but do what you want to do. And also, study in breaks. So maybe study for an hour, then go grab lunch, study for another hour, play half an hour of video games, and do your own thing. So now we're back with Jeffrey Schaefer. Now, you briefly mentioned that you went to Conestoga College, was it?
Yeah, so I went to Conestoga College for robotics and automation, as well as my industrial electrician apprenticeship in schooling. So my main education is in industrial robots. I spent some time doing automated work cells, basically mostly in the automotive industry. A lot of robot work and electronic communications, as well as some data collection systems. And something called a supervisory data control data acquisition system is something I want to look at for the region. It it allows us to have high-level overviews of what's going on in, for instance, our wastewater management systems, any of these building automations that can be networked, and our services can be monitored electronically to help with maintenance reminders and as well as emergency notification of events that are happening, problems with pumps, etc. That thing can be better monitored in real time. And that's the kind of education I got at Conestoga for being able to use computer servers to network those requests and being able to give an application that offers that service. That's something I went to school at Conestoga College for. And as well, I completed my in-school training for my industrial electrician apprenticeship, which allowed me to do more installation work on the work cell installation, although I was heavily involved in the design and programming aspects of them. So that's my primarily educational background is in that, and that's why a lot of my changes I want to bring involve automation technology, because that's something I know, and it's something I want to see move forward to help the region save a little bit of money and offer better service, because it's also about redistributing where we're offering services to be able to give them more effectively.
So I think we're unfortunately going to have to wrap it up just with the final thing. Is there anything you want to say to the students?
Check out my website at Jeffrey Schaefer, that's JeffreySchaver.ca. I'm running in Cambridge for regional council election, and make sure you check out your own local candidates, too. If you're not in Cambridge, check out your own local candidates' websites. The Region of Waterloo and your local city's websites will also have a list of all the candidates available, normally with a link to their websites. So check out their positions and see who you agree with, and make sure you vote on October 22nd.
Thank you very much for having you on, Mr. Shaver. I enjoyed this conversation very much.
Thank you for having me.
This last song goes out to everyone in Cambridge. We miss you very much.